And right now on the phone, I have Mr. John Weisberger. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well, Steve. I hope it's as nice up there as it is down here. It's a beautiful day.
It is beautiful. It's beautiful here. It's 60 degrees. When I came on the air, I told him I think spring is finally winning here.
Well, you know, there was snow on the ground here less than 2 weeks ago up on the hill on the north side of Nashville. So
up on the hill where they do the boogie?
I think it's a different hill.
Different hill? Okay.
I live up on the north side of Nashville near White House.
Okay.
There is close by, and there's some other bluegrass folks around. But our weather here isn't quite the same as it is in Nashville. It's about a half an hour away.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a little colder where we are.
Just that little bit makes a difference. John, I introduced the beginning of the show. Missy Raines will be on at 4, but I said John Weisberger is calling in sometime around 3, and I described you this way, the bass-playing bard of the bluegrass. How does that work for you?
Well, I'll take the bass playing.
Well, okay, all right. Well, and most of the bass playing you do right now, I guess your regular gig. Not that I think any musician ever has a regular gig. It's sort of an oxymoron. But you're a member of Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, correct?
That's correct. I'm in my 11th year with Chris.
Wow.
Long time. It really kind of crept up on me, but I've been real happy working with Chris and with Ned Lubrecki and in the last few years it's much tougher, so I think I'm set where I am.
Well, that's good. And I mean, of course, you show up in any number of places as a musician first, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the songwriting process while I've got
sure.
you. But you're always somewhere. I mean, you pop up on all kinds of CDs when they need a reliable bass player, and there's John Weisberger back in the background.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Missy. Missy Raines was a neighbor of mine when I first moved to Nashville, and been a big help to me. We swapped equipment, and she put me on the gigs that she wasn't able to take. I've had a good time here. Gotten to do a lot of different things and really enjoy it. I play with Roland White when Roland plays in town. And lately, and I don't know if you're even familiar with this, but you ought to be because it's definitely connected to the greater Cincinnati area, and that's a band called Retro and Smiley. And it's a Reno and Smiley tribute band. And Buddy Griffin should be known to folks in your area.
Sure.
And well, to bluegrass fans in general.
Oh, yeah.
Buddy's a great, among his many skills, he's a great Reno style banjo player. He and Ashley Messenger, Austin Williams, and Tech put together this Retro and Smiley.
Okay.
Based on that.
I wasn't familiar with it, but I'll make sure that I track it down and get familiar with it based on that recommendation. Sounds like a no-brainer to me. I wasn't following. Hey, you're also writing, in addition to songs, which we're going to get into, you also write blogs and all sorts of articles and liner notes. To me, that's the real argument that I have against CDs is not just that some of the warmth is maybe, depending on when you have the discussion late at night, is gone from the recordings, but I miss the fact there's not enough room on the back for the long, long liner notes that I grew up reading and learning on. And you're still willing and able, more than able, to put together some nice, concise liner notes for so many of the CDs that are coming out in the bluegrass field.
Yeah, well, I did quite a few, and I haven't done many lately. I did the last Chris Jones album. I wrote liner notes for, and I've done a couple of others. But I did a lot of that for a long time, and really kind of that was writing. Being a bluegrass focused music journalist was really my main career for a number of years, and I think I'm up to over 100 albums now in terms of writing liner notes.
No
That's
kidding.
Quite a bit. Yeah. I had the chance to work on some really great projects and do a lot of journalism as well. For a long time, I was writing quite a bit regularly for Bluegrass Now and Bluegrass Unlimited and the Depression magazine. But for me, that as much as I, as good as it was for me to do, is something that was a lot more stressful. And less enjoyable than playing and writing music. So That was the main reason why I moved down to Nashville about 11 years ago.
I remember.
Was to really try to make a full-time career out of playing music. And then the songwriting has really kind of kept up since then. But so I'm semi-retired in journalism. I'll post around on blogs every now and again, but that's about it. Well, I write creative stuff for the Nashville scene, so to speak.
Well, here's
that's what it is.
Here's something I'll say about John Weisberger's CD liner notes. You know, and I think you made a good point. After like 100 or so, it ought to wear you out. But I would say this about John's liner notes. It wasn't just John saying, this is really good. Okay, I mean, John had a lot more analysis and a little more depth to describing what was happening. I mean, sometimes you see liner notes and maybe they're just sort of a guest comment that this is really a good album. But John actually went into depth, and maybe that's why there was a lot of stress and... not a lot of stress, but as you mentioned, it's difficult to be that original all the time. But your notes were an education to me. They were. I'm just telling you.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. That's what I was going for, and I thought to me, whether you're talking about liner notes or a feature article or a review, to hear the voice of the writer saying I like this or I don't like this or this is great or this is terrible has always seemed to me to be like the least important thing about music journalism. And what I always try to do is to really give listeners some insight into the music that they're hearing or about to hear, and to give some context to it, including locating in large perspectives the things that I find interesting and worthwhile, kind of make sense to other people too.
Well, I think you did it very well. You won some awards for some of those writings, as I recall.
I did. I won an IBMA Liner Notes of the Year Award in 2001, and then also the IBMA's Print Media Person of the Year Award the year before that, 2000. And then I won the Charlie Lamb Excellence in Country Music Journalism Award in 2005, which I was quite excited about. That was presented to me by Matt Wise.
Wow.
A really very special moment in my life, and that was sort of the apex of my journalistic career, and it's been on a downhill slide.
Well, you filled in nicely writing songs, and you co-write a lot. I guess it's hard for me to think now, John, that it was I bought from the back of at the Station Inn, and I was looking at the back of the album here, which I have right in front of me. It's called If This Road Could Talk. This was from 2008, so I bought this from the back of the Station Inn at the end of a show when you were back there, and it's hard for me to believe that it's been that long, but it's just...
Yeah, it's not.
And you co-wrote a lot of things on here, and it kind of covers, I mean, there's just straight-ahead, die-hard bluegrass, that whole process to me, and I wanted to ask you, was this album sort of done as... not a sampler, because you weren't going back and re-recording songs. You just kind of put all these songs together and put it out there so that people could get an idea of what John Weisberger was doing on the writing side. I certainly seemed to me.
Yeah, that was definitely a big part of it. I kind of looked up and found that I had a lot of songs that I had written, co-written actually, that hadn't been demoed, and I sort of felt like with just a little more effort and energy and money, I could make something that would be that I could get out to people who are looking for some music, have something to sell at the record table, and also kind of a musical calling card to really help make that transition from being a journalist to being a musician. And of course, the songwriting was I decided pretty quickly that I had enough material that I just kind of do things, all things that were mine. It's interesting, you asked about co-writing a little bit. I started out, there are, I think, four songs on my album that I wrote by myself.
Right.
And I kind of really made an effort to put those on, but those were all actually written before I moved to Nashville, when I was still living in the Cincinnati area. They were some of my earliest writing. And pretty much all I've done since I got here 11 years ago has been co-writing.
I'd like to play. I'm going to play something from this album, and I'll tell you. Think about you give some thought to what you think. I can tell you what I listened to this album when I was driving, when I left the station in that night and I put it in, I was driving to wherever the heck I was going that night. And I actually pulled over on the side of the road when one of these songs played. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm going to play it later. Because I just was, I'm still stunned by it every time I listen to it. And it's maybe the least bluegrassy tune on that album, which probably is a good hint to you, but it just, it's just an amazing, amazing tune. But here I've got, I kind of got queued up here something from the last two Knight Drivers albums. And mm-hmm. I have here Cold Lonesome Night, which I think you wrote with Stephen Logan.
Stephen Logan,
yeah.
Yep.
Would you mind if I click that on just a little bit and then we can talk about that?
No, that'd be great.
Right, let's do that for a second. I'm talking to John Weisberger here on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. We're going to play a couple cuts that he's co-written, and I'm going to get to this album that is so impressive to me from 2008. And John, looks like John on the picture is standing out. The sign says violators will be prosecuted. I'm not sure what that sign is about. You're on the side of the road. You're someplace you're not supposed to be. You're risking arrest for the sake of bluegrass music.
That was a serendipitous find. We were out on this little country road near where I live. Michael Witch is a great Melbro player.
Oh, yeah.
And also a wonderful photographer. He did the pictures for the album, as far as I'm out there. And we came across that sign and said, well, you need to get by that sign is what you need to do. And so I did, and the cover picture was with the result. But it was really, we were focused on the road.
Yeah.
And the sign was kind of a happy coincidence.
Yeah, that's all right. All right, well, let's play Cold Lonesome Night, and this is from Chris Jones and the Knight Drivers' Cloud of Dust, correct?
That's correct.
All right, let me play this tune, then we'll be back in a second with John Weisberger. Give me a second. All right, John, we just played Cold Lonesome Night, and that's something that uh-huh. you co-wrote, according to the liner notes, for Chris Jones and the Knight Drivers with Stephen Mogin. And the co-writing process to me is just, I want you to talk a little bit about that, in context with that song, if you like, but talk about that a little bit.
Well, actually, that was the first song I wrote with Stephen, and we wrote it back, the album, we recorded it in 2009, but the song was written, 2003 or 2004, it's an old one for me. And that was when I was really kind of just getting started co-writing, and I think Stephen was as well, so it was kind of a learning experience for both of us. But I enjoy co-writing a lot. It's probably the laziness on my part.
Yeah. Is it just like the scenes in the movie Ishtar when they're sitting around writing those songs?
I don't know.
You have to go see it. Don't go see it. Don't spend money to see it. Dustin Hoffman, and it's maybe the worst reviewed movie ever, but the songwriting scenes are hysterical.
I remember that. But, a lot of times I usually try to entice people into coming up to White House and writing at my house. So more often than not, someone will come up and we'll sit down at the dining room table and write a song. And I like, one of the big advantages of co-writing to me is that I found that I don't get a lot of ideas for songs. That's not something that happens to me. It happens a lot with some people.
You mean, John, for the melody or for the story that's in?
For the melody or for the lyrics or the theme or for the hook, the title, the line that sort of defines the song. I get them every once in a while and I work on getting more, but some people just have a real facility for that. I, on the other hand, have a really big vocabulary at my fingertips.
You probably weren't listening to it too, but I said John's going to be on at 3, so go get your dictionaries and your thesaurus.
Well, I know a lot of words, so that's helpful when you write a song. Although there's the internet too, so that's But I mean, I think I bring a certain kind of discipline and an open mindedness and the ability to take an idea and turn it into implement it, if you will. Help really flesh it out and make it into a song and figure out some new melodic stuff. So that bring different strengths to the table when you find a good compliment. I write a lot with Jeremy Garrett for the Infamous Stand Up.
Sure.
As much with him as anybody else. And Jeremy goes out on the road, and he gets ideas a lot of times for melodies, boards of melodies. And he'll record them while he's out on the road, and then when we get together, he'll like flip through his phone and say, well, here's a melody we can work on here. So that's really helpful to me because when I hear a melody, a lot of times some kind of phrase or hook idea or lyric will suggest itself to me. So I get moving, that way.
Does it help you write in the process? And we're talking to John Weisberger, in case you're just tuning in to the show. Does it help you co-write with someone if you like that person as a person?
I would say yes. I haven't written with anybody that I don't like. But it's interesting in that I've gotten to like people that I didn't know very well when they started writing. And then other times there have been people who I like who I've not had such a good time writing with. So there's some degree of independence there, I guess. But really the most important thing, there are a couple of things. One is you have to be willing to put stupid ideas out. You have to be willing to not censor yourself. If you get an idea for a line, you can kind of wire it up if you want to and say, hey, listen, this is probably really bad or this sounds stupid, but what about? But after you make all your disclaimers, you then kind of have to lay it out there. Because co-writers feed off of one another. I mean, your stupid line they suggest a tweak to the other writer, take that stupid line and make it something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's interesting. So there's really not a time limit. I mean, you don't, when you get together with say Jeremy, you're not thinking we're going to have a day, we're going to write X number of songs. You just kind of take, you want to be productive, but you don't put we have to produce so many tunes by the end of the day, I would think.
Typically I don't like to write more than once a day. For me, one appointment is plenty. I've done a couple of days where, believe me, there are people down in New York who had to do two or three appointments every day, 4 or 5 days a week, which I can't do. But I do like to get in 4 or 5 appointments during the week, but one a day. And, the kind of default expectation is we'll get together and for a few hours and we'll write a song and it'll be done. But if it's not done, but we've made good progress, and it's something I like, and there's no problem. That's a lot of stuff to take to get through sessions.
All right, so we played a song that you wrote with Stephen Mojan, who, if you listen to this program, I probably more people out there, I refer to him more as Mojo, because he runs around with Ned, Nedsky and Mojo, and I play a lot of their things. But Stephen plays with, Stephen's a regular with Sam Bush at this point, isn't he, guitar player?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, he's been with Bush for 5, 6 years
now. Oh, great, great guitar player, great singer, and I play a lot of their music here. So that's a friend you've written with. Now, I'd like to play a song. The most recent Chris Jones album is a collection of older things. It's actually called Lost Souls and Free Spirits, but there's new songs on this, and this is from the Rebel Collection, Old and New. You know what I'm talking about?
I know
there's a song. Yeah, there's a song you wrote with Chris on here called Final Farewell.
Right, yes.
Okay, now here's my question. I want to listen to this song, and now you're not writing with a friend. You're kind of writing for your boss, maybe a little bit?
Yeah.
I know, it's not technical, but I mean, it's his band, and you're writing with the guy whose band it is. So I want to play this song, and I want to talk to you about the difference between writing with Mojo and then writing with someone who you record with as a member of that person's band. Is that good?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. All right, John, you and I were chatting, and I wanted to make sure I caught the end of that tune from the last Chris Jones. That's a song you wrote with Chris Jones, The Final Farewell, and that's on the most recent, that's a new recording on the most recent album, which is Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, Lost Souls and Free spirits. And so we talked about writing with Stephen Mogin, and tell me if there's a difference or just any comments you have about writing with Chris Jones.
Well, I played with Chris for a long time before we wrote anything together. In fact, that was that's the third song. Final Farewell was the, I'll take it back to the second song that Chris and I wrote together. We wrote the one called Your Silent Goodbye. It was on the Cloud of Dust album. Mm-hmm. So that was already 2009, and I've been doing a lot of coloring for 4 or 5 years by that point. Chris is a dear friend of mine, and his name is on the front of the band, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that it's a collective effort. But with Chris, the funny thing is that we've actually written 4 songs together, well, a number now, but we rarely actually sit down in a room, whether it's my dining room or anywhere else, and write together. We do a lot of stuff. He spends a lot of time up in Canada.
Right.
Probably know.
Right.
So we send each other MP3s and emails, and that's pretty much how we write. Finally, I was finished in the studio, but it started out with email MP3 exchanges.
I've heard of that happening, and I'm sure it's much more common. And of course, if people know, Chris Jones is from Canada, and he likes to go up there and watch curling tournaments while everybody else is back down here. So you're able to write with Chris in tandem through the internet.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Yep. Unusual way of writing, I would say. It's not the norm, but it's worked for us.
Yeah.
He'll have some idea for some music and maybe the germ of a lyric, and he'll send it to me, and I'll, if I listen to it enough, I'll become familiar enough with it that I can start filling in lyrics or suggest, maybe the melody can go here, mm-hmm. use this chord or whatever, and you just go back and forth that way.
Cool. Well, I want to, before I get into this, The Road Could Talk, if This Road Could Talk, the solo, it's not a solo album, but it's one you put out under your name. First of all, how can people get this? Because they're going to hear a song in a minute that I think they're going to want to find a way to get this album. Where does John live on the internet?
The best way, to reach me is through my Facebook page. Which is facebook.com/ John Weisberger, JohnWeisberger. I've been very derelict in pursuing my commercial career as a front man, and so I'm in the process of getting my website set up.
Okay.
But I don't have it yet, so that's the easiest way.
Well, when we were taking John and I were chatting through both of the songs that you all heard, John Weisberger I'm talking to, and I asked him to guess if he knew what song that I wanted to play. The one from it's a great album, but there's one song that, and as I say, is the least bluegrass. You'd probably agree with that, John.
Yep.
If we have to define bluegrass, which I refuse to do, but I think if we could say of this album the one that's the least bluegrass, that's the one. But absolutely gorgeous. You guessed what it was. Tell them what you know that I'm about to play here in a minute. I want to talk about this song for a second.
Sure. It's a ballad that I wrote with Mark Sommers, a very good friend and a frequent collaborator, called The Very Next Hello. We wrote 2006, maybe.
Yeah.
2007.
And go ahead. This is. I will tell you this. I think we were off the air. I actually pulled over on this. I bought this from John in the back of the Station Inn. I guess right after it came out, I think I happened to be down there then, and I actually pulled off on the side of the road, listened to this song twice, and it sticks with me. Non-bluegrass people, this is just, it should be a movie theme, or it should be, just a gorgeous, gorgeous melody and lyric, and then Jan Harvey is the singer, gorgeous. I mean, this is just a remarkable tune. I tell me a little bit about this song, then I want to play it, because I just like to hear it again.
Well, I appreciate that. As I said, Mark Thomas and I wrote it. I believe that this is one that we wrote when I was in Boston. I was there, went and wrote with him there a few times, and then he's come down to Nashville many times to write together. And He had the beginning of the verse written. And some musical ideas. But the opening lines are, I was a fool, I wouldn't play the fool. He had that in mind already. Mm. We just kind of went from there, and it was obvious right away it wasn't didn't lend itself to bluegrass treatment, but it was a song that I just dearly loved. Oh. So it was a no brainer to put on the album. And the band, as you mentioned, Jan Harvey sings, Ron Block from Union Station and Megan McCormick played the guitarist. The solo was Megan's. Of course, I played bass. And Mike Richard played dobro. And I think that was it. Two guitars, dobro, and the vocal and the bass.
That sounds like enough to me. It sounds like a band, as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's play this tune because I just want to hear it again. So I want everyone to get a little closer to their speakers. Gorgeous tune. It's called The Very Next Hello. It's from John Weisberger's album, If This Road Could Talk. And, boy, this song, it's just going to knock you down. I mean, it's just an amazing melody. Lyric, Jan absolutely nailed it on the vocal. And we're going to hear it right now. So hold on a second. That was it. That was the song. John and I led up to The Very Next Hello. What a beautiful song. What a beautiful song. John Weisberger, thanks so much for calling in, spending some time with us today. I appreciate what you're doing out there, and wow, thanks so much for the music, man.
Well, thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you somewhere down the road.
I'll be down there someday, a couple days. I'm going to pop down, and we'll find you somewhere, okay?
Great.
All right, John.
Thanks,
man. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.